Anyatha karma kurvano, manarudho nibhajyate, guna pravaha patito, nashta pragyo prajatyataha. Narada Muni continued to speak to King Parcinibharishat. My dear king, any person who works according to the directions of the Vedic scriptures does not become involved in fruitive activities. Otherwise, a person who acts whimsically falls down due to false prestige. Thus, he becomes involved in the laws of nature, which are composed of the three qualities, goodness, passion, and ignorance. In this way, a living entity becomes devoid of his real intelligence and becomes perpetually lost in the cycle of birth and death. Thus, he goes up and down from a microbe in stool to a high position in the Brahma Loka. We are continuing the second page of this purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The word manarudha is also very significant in this verse. Under the pretext of becoming great philosophers and scientists, men throughout the whole world are working on the mental platform. Such men are generally non-devotees due to not caring for the instructions given by the Lord to the first living creature, Lord Brahma. The Bhagavatam therefore says, Harava bhaktasya kuto mahadguna manorathena sati dhavato bahi. A person who is non-devotee has no good qualifications because he acts on the mental platform. One who acts on the mental platform has to change his standard of knowledge periodically. We consequently see that one philosopher may disagree with another philosopher, and one scientist may put forth a theory contradicting the theory of another scientist. All of this is due to their working on the mental platform without a standard of knowledge. In the Vedic instructions, however, the standard of knowledge is accepted, even though it may sometimes appear that the statements are contradictory. Because the Vedas are the standard of knowledge, even though they may appear contradictory, they should be accepted. If one does not accept them, he will be bound by the material conditions. The material conditions are described in this verse as guna pravaha, the flowing of the three modes of material nature. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur therefore says in a song, Miche mayarabhase yacha bhese kacha haba dububhai. Why are you suffering? Why are you sometimes being drowned in the waves of material nature and sometimes coming to the surface? Jeev Krishna Das e Vishvas Korlita Ardukanai. Please, therefore, accept yourself as the servant of Krishna. Then you will be freed from all miseries. As soon as one surrenders to Krishna and accepts the perfect standard of knowledge, which is Bhagavad Gita as it is, he then comes out of the material modes of nature and does not fall down and lose his knowledge. Nasta pragya. The word pragya means perfect knowledge, and nasta pragya means one who has no perfect knowledge. One who does not have perfect knowledge has only mental speculation. By such mental speculation, one falls down and down into a hellish condition of life. By transgressing the laws laid down in the Shastras, one cannot become pure in heart. When one's heart is not purified, One acts according to the three material modes of nature. These activities are very nicely explained in verses 1 through 6 of the 17th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita further explains, Traigunya Vishaya Veda Nistrai Gunya Bhavarjuna Nirdvandvo Nitya Shatvasto Niryoga Kshema Atmavan. The Vedas mainly deal with the subject of the three modes of material nature. Rise above these modes, O Arjuna. Be transcendental to all of them. Be free from the dualities and from all anxieties for gain and safety, and be established in the Self. The entire world and all material knowledge is within three modes of material nature. One has to transcend these modes, and to attain that platform of transcendence, one must follow the instructions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and thus become perfect in life. Otherwise, one will be knocked down by the waves of material nature's three modes. This is further explained in Srimad Bhagavatam in the words of Prahlad Maharaj. Matirna krishne paratasvatova mithopapadyet grihabratanam adanta gopira vishatam tamishram puna punas charvata charvananam. Materialistic persons who are too much engaged in material enjoyment and who do not know anything beyond their material experiences are carried by the whims of material nature. They live a life characterized by chewed, and they are controlled by their uncontrolled senses. Thus they go down to the darkest regions of hellish life. Otherwise, a person who acts whimsically falls down due to false prestige. Thus he becomes involved in the laws of nature, which are composed of three qualities: goodness, passion, and ignorance. In this way, a living entity becomes devoid of his real intelligence and becomes perpetually lost in the cycle of birth and death. Thus, he goes up and down from a microbe in stool to a high position in the Brahma Loka planet. Today we are reading from Canto 4, Srimad Bhagavatam, Chapter 26, entitled King Puranjan Goes to the Forest to Hunt, text number 8. Narada Muni is in this chapter speaking an allegorical narration to King Prachinibarhishat to expose the essential anarthas within his heart, which was prohibiting him from making proper spiritual progress. King Prachinibarhishat is a descendant of Prithu Maharaj, Dhruva Maharaj, comes in a line of great Vaishnav Paramhamsas. In fact, comes in the line of an avatar of the Lord. And his sons, the Prachetas, on his instruction, went into the wilderness to practice tapasya for spiritual enlightenment. So both his ancestors, previous to him, as well as descendants, were very, very great and sincere devotees. Therefore, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is showing special mercy to the king. Because the path of bhakti is personal. The relationship between the Lord and his devotee is personal. It is not something that is simply ritualistically automatic. Prabhupada explains here in purport, it is really a matter of the heart. Therefore, if a devotee who gives his life and soul to the Lord shows his or her favor in affection to anyone, that person will naturally receive the mercy of the Lord. Thus, there are many descriptions in the Shastras of the incredible effects of the presence of a devotee, whether it is within a family or within a village or even on the planet. Everyone gets such great benefit. Someone like Vasudev Dutt, because he felt so affectionate toward every living entity, Lord Chaitanya said, I will send them all beyond material life. I will give them all liberation because of your affection toward them. It sounds quite inconceivable, but that was the power of his love. Vasudev Dutt loved every living entity to such an extent that he was willing to go to hell for the sins of everyone, as long as it was required, so that they could be with Krishna, forgiven. Therefore, the Lord, because you love everyone, they will all be liberated. Not on the basis of their qualifications, but on the basis of your surrender, of your concern. That is extraordinary. When we see the life of Srila Prabhupada, it is really inconceivable. We know the hardships and austerities he performed, leaving Vrindavan. In his diary, Anjaladuta, after suffering two major heart attacks, seasickness, dizziness. And factually, he did not know who was going to be there and who was not going to be there when he knew who was not going to be there, but he didn't know who was going to be there when he arrived in New York. And who was he doing it for? He was executing the order of his Guru Maharaj, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, whose disappearance day we celebrated yesterday. In his prayers, Anjaladuta, he praises his spiritual master, that Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur wholeheartedly accepted not only the instructions, but the spirit of love of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Nityananda Prabhu. They came to this world to freely give Krishna prema, not just to the Brahmins, not just to the people of Bharat Bhumi, but to anyone and everyone. Lord Chaitanya demonstrated how he could give Krishna prema even to the elephants, tigers, serpents, trees, plants, and insects when he was in Jharkhand. Nature of his mercy. When the Lord personally descends in this world, he engages in extraordinary activities in his way of delivering living entities that no one else can possibly imitate. But through his devotees, he does the work in a very special way. He shows the quality of the nature of the devotee's love by putting the devotee through many tribulations to reach out to all of us. The Lord does not have to do that. The Lord shows his supreme opulence. Simply by his glance, people became devotees in ecstatic love. But to show the nature of the love of his servants, he puts his devotees through many, many difficulties. how much these people care about the conditioned souls. So Srila Prabhupada explains how Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, actually he was living in Mayapur. He made that vow to chant 1 billion names of Krishna in very severely austere condition. And it took him several years, but he perfectly fulfilled that vow of chanting 1 billion names of Krishna. But he left Mayapur Dham to do what none of the other Babaji's were willing to do. He moved to Calcutta. For those of you who have been to Calcutta, you have some understanding of what we're talking about. Actually, you don't, in a sense, that what Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was seeing in Mayapur Dham, the eternal abode of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his associates, Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj, when he was going blind, Bhakti Vinod Thakur wanted to bring him to Calcutta for some medical treatment for his eyes. But Gaur Kishore Das Babaji said, "You want to take me to hell?" He wouldn't go. Rather, he went practically blind because he refused to treat if it meant going to Calcutta. So he demonstrated the Lord's will in a particular way. But then Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Gaur Kishore Das Babaji very strongly inspired and instructed Sri Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati to spread this mission everywhere. Therefore he went to Calcutta. And he had this spirit that wherever there's the largest, most polluted, sinful cities, that is where we should be preaching. That is where people require the mercy of the Lord the most. Such compassion. What you have to be subjected to do such a thing. We have our Yajna Purusha Prabhu, and along with him, Radha Ballabh, Gadadhar Pandit, and Joe. They are living and preaching in Manhattan Island in the Lower East Side of New York. Very hellish condition, very polluted. You don't hear sweet bhajans coming from the windows of the stores there. All music in the modes of passion, ignorance, the way people dress, the way people eat, the way people act. One of our devotees who comes regularly to Radha Gopinath Temple, he recently visited there, and he was absolutely appalled. Just walking down the street, he said, "I never want to go back to that place again, New York City." He said, "Men and women are embracing right in the street, and the way they dress, and the way they smoke cigarettes, and everything, the smells coming out of the places." He says, "It's hell, it's hell." Well, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, his spirit was, yes, let us go to hell to deliver the conditioned souls. That's where they need it most. Even if it means having to endure the pollution, the sufferings of that atmosphere. So Srila Prabhupada wrote that Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, it was his desire that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's will be executed. That in every town and village throughout the world, the holy names of the Lord will be chanted. And he wrote in his beautiful diary how I am so far from Vrindavan and my beloved deity lords, Sri Govinda Gopinath and Radha Damodar. So far from Vrindavan. He is writing this while in the middle of the ocean on a cargo ship, not knowing where his destiny would bring him. He said, but I am glad because it is the will of my Guru and Mahaprabhu so far from Vrindavan, in separation from the holy Dham. So this was Srila Prabhupada's spirit, his spirit of love. The amazing thing to contemplate is generally we love people that we are close to. In Kali Yuga, even that is becoming rare. But still, there's some common things about it. A mother loves her child. A father loves children. We love our parents. We love our friends. To some extent. But to love people that you've never seen, you've never heard of, who have absolutely nothing in common with you, and to be willing to sacrifice your life for them, that is quite extraordinary. Srila Prabhupada was coming to a place of malechas and yovanas, meat-eaters, people who have no conception of Vedic principles, people who he knew would hate him and reject him, people he had never seen before. He was risking his life for them. Because when he went to America, he did not know a single person there. Nobody. He heard about this Gopal Agarwal, and his father said nothing but bad things about his son. His father told Prabhupada that my son has been trapped by Maya. He's become just like a Westerner. He was disgusted with his son. Prabhupada never met him. But that was the only person he even knew about in America. He's going to a land of people who never heard of Krishna, who lived by no Vedic principles. Yet he was willing to endure heart attacks, willing to endure poverty, willing to endure persecution, willing to endure even death if required, to show his love for them. That is love. On the spiritual platform. So because King Prachini Barhishat was naturally dear to the Vaishnavas due to the proximity of being his relative, the Lord sent his dear associate Narada Muni to give him special mercy. And here Sri Narada Muni is preaching according to time, place, and circumstance in such a way to somehow or other transform the heart of this proud and very powerful king. It's not easy speaking to a king, especially king of the world. So Narada Muni, somehow or other, he wanted to change his heart. So he's speaking this story of King Puranjan, so that the king would like to hear this gossip about another person. Because material people like gossip. Yes. Basically, what is newspapers? Gossip. What is all the magazines and televisions? It's just so much prajalpa. So for people on the material platform of consciousness, prajalpa is very sweet. For a devotee, it's intolerable. That's for devotees to mix with non-devotees is very difficult. Because so much prajalpa, to participate in that, to even hear it, it's not just boring, it's painful. It's a painful waste of time. And actually, this is one of the methods by which you can calculate how you're actually making spiritual progress. By what prajalpa sounds like to you. If you're still attracted to hearing about the faults of others, or about the mundane activities of others, that's a sign that you still very much have the fever of material entanglement. But when prajalpa becomes not only boring, but painfully boring, then you can understand you're making progress. But there's only one way that such a transformation can take place. Param drisva nivartate. We have to experience a higher taste, because we must taste something. Anandamayo vyashat. The spirit soul by nature must taste something. The longing for pleasure is there eternally within our hearts. If there's nothing better, then prajalpa is like nectar. That is our conditioning. And Krishna gives so many lessons through material nature for human beings to learn from. But very few people are able to understand what nature is teaching us unless we see through the eyes of the scriptures. And that is what the spiritual master teaches us. How not only to theoretically understand philosophy, but how to practically see the world through the eyes of the scripture. Srila Prabhupada many times gave us example of hogs. Hogs, for them, stool is so nice. They're conditioned to enjoy it with their mouths. Now, I know you heard this example many times, but I don't know how many times you've actually thought about it. Just for a moment, think about eating that substance. Not just with your mind, think about it from the sensual platform. You don't have to think about it too long. It's horrible. Are any of you feeling agitated by the thought? Eager for class to get out so that you could go out and feast? No, it's horrible. But hogs, they fight over it. We have seen. I have seen with my own eyes that one hog had this wet substance all over their face, and all the other hogs were just like attacking to lick its face to somehow or other extract nectar, and they were making all loud noises fighting over it because that's all they know. So how to give up? Actually, Srila Prabhupada said, Prabhupada's teaching us very graphically that actually to speak prajalpa is to be eating stool. That's all. It tastes like nectar to gossip to people because they're like hogs. Hogs, dogs, camels, and asses with their mouths. But speaking about Krishna is like eating nectar. So the only way to give up this prajalpa is to somehow or other taste the glories of the Lord. Srila Prabhupada explains that sometimes when people speak all nonsense, the guru tells them to be Moni Baba, that you take vow never to speak. But we have seen Moni Babas, they have this old jagged piece of slate with chalk. And they write, because they're not allowed to speak. Their guru ordered them to take vow. And we have seen that they write all prajalpa nonsense. Sometimes it is like that. That propensity is so strong in the heart. That's why Srila Prabhupada explained we should not be attached to reading newspapers. He gave that story of the Christian missionary who went to the coal mines and was trying to convert people and told them how
what hell is like. It is very dark. It is very cold. It is sometimes very hot. And they said, well, that sounds like what we're living today. We'll feel right at home there. So when he tried somehow or other to reach these people, preaching according to time, place, and circumstance, he said, in hell there are no newspapers. And they all converted. To live without newspapers, very difficult. People are very much addicted to this. Now, for devotees, for the purpose of just getting some basic understanding of what's going on in the world for preaching or for business, sometimes they have to do this newspaper reading. But it shouldn't be that we spontaneously have an attraction for it. That if the newspaper man does not come that day, you're feeling withdrawal pains. You're feeling anxiety. Or when you wake up in the morning and you're chanting your japa, you're just feeling a great longing springing from your heart to somehow or other finish your rounds so that you could read the newspaper or watch the news. If we still have those inclinations, that is a sign of our lower consciousness dictating to us. However, when we have a very great excitement and enthusiasm to read Srila Prabhupada's books, to come to Srimad Bhagavatam class, to chant in kirtan and chant japa, when we actually really begin to like these things, we want these things, and all other subjects become painfully boring, that's actually a real sign that we're becoming purified of anarthas. According to our shastras, Rupa Goswami, he explains, what is the quality of a great Vaishnav? Great Vaishnav's quality is that such a devotee has no propensity to find fault in others. That is another way we can evaluate our spiritual progress. We like to find faults in others. It tastes like nectar. And especially when we hear such topics. Bhagavatam explains that such mundane topics are pilgrim places for people who have the consciousness of crows. Crows are very attracted to dirty, filthy garbage. Yes? That's why there's so many crows in Bombay. But actually, during japa every morning, I have been very much happily listening to the sweet singing of birds. At one time, every morning, it was just crows. Do you remember? Like that. All around the windows, they'd be just, hey, Hare Krishna, wah, wah, like that. But now, there's no crows. It's all sweet singing. I can easily imitate crows, but I cannot imitate the sweet singing because of my conditioning. But now, you come every morning, it's like stereo effects of sweet singing birds. It was so sweet, so pleasing to the ears. Did any of you notice this? Maybe you're all so absorbed in the holy name that you don't hear anything else. But since I've been back, I've never heard like this before. From all directions, like stereo. I actually thought that the devotees bought some CD of birds and were playing it on the speakers. It's continuous through the japa period. Yes, Raghupati, I said, is that coming from CD or is that coming from Windows? It was sparrows singing very nicely. So somehow or other, our temple is not only attracting swan-like human beings, but even pious birds are coming here. The swans, the auspicious birds, they like to come to the places where there's fresh, cool waters and sweet nectarine pollen within the lotus flowers. And the crows like garbage. And the more decomposed and pungent the garbage is, the more they like it. Yes? And we see, from what I have been told, the televisions, the movies, it's becoming more disgusting. When I was young in the 1950s and 1960s, there was no sex in any media. Television, movies, there was just, you know, the most as they would embrace at the end. Yes, Srinathji Prabhu, you remember? But now, from the beginning to the end, they're doing so many things. And little children, they could see anything. As Kali Yuga progresses, people become more and more addicted to abominable situations. And they enjoy it. Now for a devotee to see these things, to hear these things, at the beginning, we may have to perform the tapasya of somehow or other restraining our senses. Tani sarvani samyamya yukta asitamatpara. We must somehow or other restrain our senses and fix our consciousness on Krishna. But as we become spiritually purified, like Yamunacharya. Yamunacharya, he said, when I even think of the king of all sense gratification, he said, my lips curl in distaste and Prabhupada says, spite at the thought. Spite is spit by our Malecha way of saying it. Can't tolerate what people are mad after is disgusting. So yes, that is a sign of spiritual progress. Rupa Goswami explains that a real Vaishnava doesn't even have the inclination or the propensity within the core of the heart to find faults in others. This was described, Raghunath Bhat Goswami. He used to sing Srimad Bhagavatam to the other Goswamis and to Lord Chaitanya himself in 5 very sweet different melodies. He was so much deeply tasting the sweetness of Srimad Bhagavatam and Harinam Sankirtan that it is explained if anyone were to find faults with Vaishnavas, he would leave the place. Even if it was true. Even if they were speaking true things about a devotee, about defects, mishaps, he would say, just the fact that he's a servant of Krishna is all I need to know. I don't want to hear anything more. Now, sometimes, like a physician, one must speak the faults of others to protect others from being contaminated, polluted by those faults, or to keep from those faults causing agitation or disturbance to people's lives. Well, sometimes as preachers, Srila Prabhupada demonstrated, we must do that. But it is not with a fault-finding propensity. It's with a service, positive service spirit. But actually, even to do that is painful. So this is very important. And in this particular verse, the very root cause of all of these attachments to the lower forms of entanglement is described. Narada Muni explains that one who follows the principles of the Vedas, that person does not get involved in fruitive activities, does not become entangled in the laws of karma. Otherwise, a person who acts whimsically falls down due to false prestige. The particular section that we are reading today of the purport, Srila Prabhupada is describing Manarudha. This is very significant. Under the pretext of becoming great philosophers and scientists, Men throughout the whole world are working on the mental platform. Such men are generally non-devotees, due to not caring for the instructions given by the Lord to the first living creature, Lord Brahma. The Bhagavatam therefore says, Harava bhaktasya kuto mahadguna manoratena sati dhavato bahi. A person who is not a devotee has no good qualifications because he acts on the mental platform. The danger of the false ego. This is the predominant theme of the Vedic scriptures. Within the Puranic literatures, Mahabharata, there are many stories, instances of how this false ego degrades a pure spirit soul's consciousness. Because the false ego is the most basic element of material creation. Why does the Vedic literatures give such graphic descriptions of creation? Because the more we understand the nature of creation, the more we understand how it works and how to resolve the dilemma of material bondage. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur explained, if we could just understand these three forms of Vishnu, Karunadakshaya Vishnu, Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, and Kshirodakshaya Vishnu, then we won't have to take birth in this material world again. But these are Purusha avatars. They are here especially within material creation. Karunadakshaya Vishnu is not laying in the causal ocean beyond the Paravyoma or the Viraja. He's laying within the Viraja, within the medium between material and spiritual worlds, and is creating everything. So these three Vishnus are specifically within the realm of temporary creation. So why is it so important to understand them? Why not understand Lord Narayan in Vaikuntha, or Rasaraj Krishna in Krishna Loka? Why the Bhagavatam gives so much description about these three Vishnus and what's happening within their creative potencies? Because we must simultaneously, as Ishopanishad explains, we must simultaneously cultivate knowledge and ignorance. Yes? Cultivating ignorance means understanding the nature of ignorance. It doesn't mean becoming ignorant. We have seen devotees, they can justify anything on the scriptures without sanction of Guru Sadhu Shastra. I have seen devotees engage in taking intoxications and saying, I'm just following the scripture. You're supposed to cultivate ignorance and long with knowledge, so I'm chanting Hare Krishna and smoking ganja. This is Ishopanishad in action. But cultivating ignorance, understanding, not cultivating, but understanding side by side, is actually knowledge. What is the nature of ignorance? Cultivating that understanding. And that's really what we're talking about when we're speaking about Karunadakshaya Vishnu, Kshirodakshaya Vishnu, and Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. How they're creating this illusory world. And why? Of all the eight elements, the first element that emanates from the Lord within the Mahatattva is the false ego. It's the foundation. It's the root. Just like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explains to Rupa Goswami about the weeds that grow within the heart. Now, the nature of these weeds, for a materialistic person, it's just a forest of weeds. And a materialistic person thinks all these weeds are very beautiful, beautiful flower garden. Yes? They're just with great care and attention watering each weed, thinking how nice, how precious, how valuable, And if someone comes to trample the weed, they'll just put their life on the line to protect that precious weed that Maya Mata Beej, that seed of illusion. But a devotee must discriminate. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explains, when you become a devotee, as you're chanting and hearing the glories of the Lord, that is the water that is being put on that seed of devotion that has been awakened in the heart by the mercy of the spiritual master. But simultaneously, the weeds are growing. And just cutting them, you can cut weeds many, many, many times, and they just keep growing and growing and growing. In fact, the more you cut them, the stronger they grow. Yes? It's like Ravana's 10 heads. However many times his heads and arms were cut, they just grew right back. You have to go to the root cause, the source. If you go to the root of a weed and you attack that, then the weed is finished forever. So the root cause of all of our material bondage and attachments is the false ego, ahankar. If we want to reach this ahankar, we must understand exactly what is the process. We must identify it for what it is. And it is a fact. You can become a celibate monk. You can be a great scholar of the scriptures. You could perform so many heroic deeds in the service of the Lord. But if that ahankar is still there, then it's just a matter of time till the weeds of lust, anger, envy, pride, greed, illusion, they will again sprout in the heart, because they're all dormant in their potential state within the false ego. All the bad qualities that cause bondage within this existence are all within the seed of false ego. All suffering is within the seed of the false ego. And yes, we can cut and cut and cut superficially, but as long as that seed's there, everything is still in its potential state. All illusion, ignorance, bondage. And therefore we see sometimes people can do very wonderful works, but because that false ego is still there, they could fall down to abominable activities at any moment. Here Srila Prabhupada is explaining that within this world, so many scientists and philosophers are creating theories based on the false ego, based on their intellectual prowess, their very developed material observations of this world. But it's all just springing from the false ego. Therefore, we must understand from the Vedas. And how do we understand from the Vedas? Tad vijnanartham sugurum eva abhigacchet. We must understand Vedas from Guru. And how do we understand from Guru? Krishna explains, tadvidi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya. The very basis, the beginning of a real relationship is humility. We have to be submissive. In the mood of Arjuna, I do not know anything. I'm desperate. Please tell me. Then we can hear. Srila Prabhupada explains there are so many apparent contradictions within the Vedas. But Prabhupada said we should accept them anyway. Now, for a materialistic person, this doesn't make sense. Because for knowledge to have validity, it should be without contradictions. But the Supreme Lord is achintya. He is inconceivable. The Lord spoke the Vedas to Brahma. Brahma empowered through Narada Muni Vyas to compile them. There are so many words of enlightened sages. Why are those contradictions there? specifically on purpose. The apparent contradictions of the Vedas are actually not just accidental. Or maybe the person who wrote this Purana didn't write that Purana, so he doesn't know that it says something different. Vedavyas wrote all the Puranas. Yes? So these apparent contradictions are a test, but at the same time, a wonderful means of training us. That reality of the truth of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and how he creates material nature and how he performs his leelas beyond material nature is simply inconceivable and beyond the purview of our intelligence to grasp. Not everything's just going to make every kind of sense according to our rational, logical conditioning of how things are supposed to be. You can never understand God as long as you're stuck on that platform. So you have to be jarred, you have to be uprooted from that anarta and understand that the Lord is inconceivable. He could do anything in any way beyond all of our logical conditionings. There was that famous incident where some great scholars in the academic world met Prabhupada. Now these people are Sanskrit scholars. Their PhD work is in researching the Vedas. And several of them came together to meet Prabhupada, not just one. And they said, Swamiji, we find in the commentaries of the great acharyas there are many contradictions. And Prabhupada, with such gravity and conviction, responded, there are no contradictions amongst the great acharyas. And they started to cite some contradictions. And Prabhupada's response was, there are no contradictions amongst the great acharyas. Because the apparent contradictions are simply different perspectives of the truth. There's a perception from the mode of ignorance, the mode of passion, the mode of goodness. There's the perception from the transcendental platform. And even on this transcendental platform, there's perceptions according to one's particular relationship with Krishna, one's particular rasa with Krishna. Yes? When the gopas are jumping on Krishna, they're having a good time. But Mother Yashoda is very much, she's not having a good time seeing gopas jumping on Krishna. She's thinking, oh, his soft body, they're wrestling with him, what will happen? So there are various perceptions of the truth. And it's being explained in various ways for various purposes to elevate various kinds of people or to give various instructions. But when we understand the absolute truth, we understand everything emanating from the absolute truth, its relationship with its origin, and therefore there's no contradiction. But if we don't understand the root cause, if we don't understand the essence, and we see everything separate from the essence, then there's so many apparent contradictions. Does that make sense? So Srila Prabhupada is seeing the essence of what the acharyas are saying, and he doesn't see any contradiction. They're all just working in different ways for the same exact purpose, to ultimately bring people to the intimate, loving service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's the purpose of everything in the Vedas. Vedaish cha sarvaraham eva vedyo vedanta krit veda vedeva chaham. Krishna says, I am the compiler of the Vedas, Vedanta, and by all the Vedas, I am to be known. When we understand this principle, then all the Vedas make sense to us. If we do not understand this principle, but all the Vedas are to know Krishna, and how Krishna is the compiler, then there can be so many problems. So many sects can arise. People are even hating each other, willing to kill each other on the basis of different interpretations. That is the problem in the world today. This so-called religious fanaticism, terrorism, hatred, actually, there are moral, pious, deep-thinking people who really believe that there should just be no religion. Because look at what these religious people are doing to each other. Factually, historically, some of the greatest problems in the world are based on various kinds of religious fanaticism. Yes? Vedaischa sever aham eva vedo, vedantakrit veda vedeva chaham. Because people do not understand. What is the purpose? Once you understand the purpose, then everything else makes sense in its perspective. Krishna is the essence. Therefore, Krishna says in Gita, Traigunya vashaya veda, nistraigunya bhavarjana, nirdvandvo nityashatvashto, niryogakshema atmavan. The Vedas mainly deal with the subject of the three modes of material nature. Rise above these modes, O Arjuna. Be transcendental to all of them. Be free from all dualities and from all anxieties for gain and safety, and be established in the self. Yes, the Vedic literatures are trying to elevate various people in various ways, and most people are so much steeped in the bondage of the modes of material nature, the Vedas are trying to somehow or other elevate them on the level of the modes of material nature. And therefore, there's so many different kinds of religions. Speaking about the Vedas, we're also speaking about other scriptures which are, in one sense, supplementary to the Vedas according to their historical context. So it is very, very difficult. Therefore, Krishna explains, give up. Give up these flowery words of the Vedas. Understand what is the purpose, what is the essence, what is the goal of life of all the Vedic literatures. Sarva dharman purityajya mam ekam sharanam braja aham tvam sarva papebhyo moksha isamimasu chaha.